It was extremely exciting back when it was like, you know, announced in 2015. But I don't know. There's been a mix of a lot of people wanting to publish things about it, getting a little bit ahead of themselves. But I mean, it is really interesting. The guy that discovered it was like certain that humans, like modern Homo sapiens, evolved in Southern Africa, but there's never really been anything that conforms with that. That Star Cave, it's something Star Cave, I can't remember, but that site is fascinating. National Geographic's done several pretty long articles about it, including one pretty recently. I remember reading how the hell they got those bodies in there. There's questions as to whether they intentionally buried the dead, but I don't, Gutsit Gibbon did a breakdown of that. I don't really think there was much to go on to suggest that. It's not a missing link. I will say.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I know it's a separate species from, what's it called? Homo sapiens and Homo neanderthalus and all that. I saw the Netflix documentary they did, and I don't want to take it at face value, and I'm not in this, I don't know, have any formal training or anything like that in science. And I wanted to ask somebody who I consider yourself. I wanted to ask somebody who has a bit more qualifications in how to approach something like this.
Oh, sure. The coolest thing about Homo naledi to me was it was very much like half modern, half, not exactly basal, but like more primitive, because the brain case is pretty small. The eyebrow ridges are pretty large. The jaw is pretty large. The finger bones even still have a lot of natural curvature to them. Because if you look at there's a cool website called eSkeletons.org. You can look up.
Could you repeat that? I want to write that down real quick.
eSkeletons.org. So just skeletons with the letter E in front of it. And then O-R-G. And you can look at bones of a bunch of different primates. And when you look, for example, at orangutan finger bones, you see that they're actually curved. And that's because if the bones are curved, your muscles conserve energy because it's easier to hang on to a branch. Because there's a lot of passive, I don't know what the term for this is, but you can passively hang on to a branch. The shape of the bone like does the work for you, whatever. Oh, okay. So anyways, naledi, it's not very extreme, but there's still some like residual curvature in those hand and finger bones. But naledi's feet, like the hip and the legs and the bones of the feet, are almost, from what I heard in the initial findings, were like very close to indistinguishable from modern. And that's cool. And that kind of makes sense, because if we changed if the new niche opened up and the Homo branch started to be less arboreal, well, our primary mode of walking around was, you know, or of moving around and where we lived was on the ground, not in the trees. So what that does is it puts very high selective pressure on the legs to become more adapted for upright walking. So you want the angle that the femur fits into the pelvis to be slightly different. You want the arch of the foot to be different. You want the structure and shape of those bones to be different. But guess what? For the hands, there's nowhere near as dramatic of selective pressure. So you would think that the bone structure in the hands and the arms or whatever would change more slowly. And that is exactly what Homo naledi shows. It's really cool. The upper body, like I said, is more basal, and the lower body's very modern.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I know the Netflix documentary suggested that if, you know, they deliberately buried it implies spirituality. And when you're looking at societies that have a sense of spirituality, it's considered a sign of intelligence. I'm not sure if that's entirely truthful or not. And it redefines how we view humanity, which I think is a bit ridiculous. You know, if Homo naledi does have like spirituality, then it's just another species of hominid that has had spirituality. Like, it doesn't really redefine anything about humanity.
I mean, any organism that has the ability to think beyond its own self and ask a question would have, or would almost certainly have, some sort of element of spirituality, right? But I don't know. I mean, unless we for certain found like art that they did that very clearly had some could only have had like symbolic meaning or whatever, then I don't really know if there's much to go off of. But I mean, they did deliberately bury their bed or bury their bed, bury their dead.
Very typical of us to bury our beds.
Yes, we buy a new bed every night.
Yeah, exactly.
it's wrecking us financially. But even if they did bury their dead, I don't think that necessarily gets you to spirituality, because there's far simpler explanations for that, I would think. For example, we know that there's cool research you can watch on YouTube, I think from when Vsauce was doing Mindfield, there's like a monkey research lab in Japan that's pretty famous, and there are some monkeys that wash their food before they eat it. Some of them, like, they do it all the time, but other times, like, if it's like near poop, they will wash it before eating. Now, do they know things about germs? Obviously not. Do they understand disease? Obviously not. But I mean, raccoons wash their food too. Like, just the idea that an organism, by just doing that action that would be beneficial to it, and like we can describe scientifically why it's beneficial from a standpoint of like disease or whatever, even though they know nothing about it, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't end up doing something like that. And burying your dead, kind of, you know, dead bodies aren't necessarily very healthy to be around. You know, so if they were doing something like that, I like the leap to spirituality is, I mean, it's fascinating. It's cool to talk about. It would make really awesome books. But I think that's just it's too big of a leap.
Yeah, I think we'd need to do a lot more research into whether or not this was a spiritual act or an act. But burying the dead in the same place to me implies a sense of tradition, which really most animal species do have. This, some social animals at least have a sense of tradition. Elephants, sometimes meerkats, apes, there's a lot of social animals that have this sense of tradition, but that's mostly because they, from my understanding, at least, I don't know if this is correct, from my understanding, it's because they learn from the previous generation and just continue it on.
Sort of. I mean, to what extent, I mean, that is culture. To what extent is there culture in the animal kingdom? There's interesting conversations about that, like whale songs change. There are regional differences between whale songs, and a whale song in one part of the world gradually migrates to other parts of the world. Like how, you know, trends start in the East Coast and they don't make it to the Midwest for another like 10 years. And then people in the Midwest are like, hey, have you guys heard of this new thing called whatever, you know? Where was I going with this? Well, I was going to say something interesting about meerkats. Don't let me forget that. But
they compare them.
I guess, well, I don't really have anything else to say about animal culture. It's just, it would be extremely hard to figure out if that's what's actually going on. Like, for example, somebody commented this on one of my YouTube channels. They were saying, like, what do you make of the whole idea that chimps have entered the Stone Age and stuff like that? And I said, I think we need to pump the brakes on that a little bit, because I don't think that chimps actually have technology, I wouldn't say. I mean, I guess if you take a raw material from the environment and you do something with it other than, you know, allow it to exist, is that technically technology? I guess so, but I mean, if that's the case, there are fish that have technology. So let's not get too carried away with that. But like, chimpanzees, they will use like big rocks to crack open seeds. But it takes like 8 years for a chimp to learn that skill, because chimps are incapable of teaching their offspring how to do it. They sit and they watch and they mimic, but because they don't actually have like a theory of mind or whatever, a chimp can't help another chimp figure out how to do this task. It's just them watching each other do stuff and failing repeatedly. There's also, I've also heard like hilarious studies, like with food rewards in chimpanzees, where it's something like you give them, I think it's like you can teach them numbers. They can learn that 2 is greater than 1 and 3 is greater than 2. They can learn that in a way, but there's like this really funny way you can do it where if they pick the smaller, it's either a smaller number or a smaller food reward. I don't remember, but like if you give, I think it's food. If you show them, you give them a small pile of food and a big pile of food, you put it in front of them and have them choose one. The way it works is if they choose the small one, they get the big one. They're like incapable of passing that test. And what's really funny is they can actually be quite emotional. And apparently these, I don't know if it's, I'm pretty sure it's chimps, but they will, they pick the big one, but then they're given the small one and they do that, you know, they're actually in anguish, but it won't, like you do this 100 times in a row and they will fail it every single time. So there's just something there that isn't clicking. It's like the idea that they actually like have culture and are actually passing things down. I think that's a little bit too generous. That's what I would say.
Yeah. That's probably a pretty fair response. Anyway, I gotta go, but I really appreciate you explaining that to me. And
Oh yeah, you're totally welcome. I'm gonna talk about the meerkat thing after you go. But meerkats. So actually, this will be really quick. They actually teach their young how to deal with scorpions. So mothers will give a dead scorpion with its stinger, or no, just a dead scorpion to really young pups, and then they play around with it, they eat it or whatever. When the pups are a little bit older, the mom will bite off the stinger and give them live scorpions to practice killing. And then eventually they just give them, scorpions that are fully locked and loaded. So it's really awesome. They teach them along like this, in education, there's this thing called the zone of proximal development. And that's what it reminds me of. You like scaffold things to meet them right where they're at, like right on the boundary of what they maybe can or can't do, to make it harder so that they increase and get better at a skill.
That makes sense. I appreciate your time. I hope to come and see you live again at some point. Ciao.
Me too. Later. What does modern science say about the beginning of the universe? I wouldn't say that modern science says anything about whether or not the universe has a beginning, or any kind of cause, right? I mean, you could say it has a beginning point in time, but science has nothing to say about the creation of the universe, including whether or not it was.
Okay. So if the universe had a beginning, it might not necessarily need a cause?
Well, it could have a beginning in time, but that doesn't mean that the universe didn't exist before the element of time was part of the structure of the universe.
Okay. So the Big Bang, that's not a theory on the beginning of the universe? That's not a theory on the cause of the universe?
Not the cause. I mean, you could say it's a theory about the cause of the universe expanding from its initial state, but not like what made the universe begin to happen. The Big Bang describes the universe. It doesn't contain, nor could it contain, an explanation of, well, there wasn't a universe, and then there started to be a universe. No, I mean, really, you couldn't really have a scientific theory like that, apart from like the idea of like, well, if we simulated a universe, then you could say that universe begins to exist. But that's not really something that I think science could successfully like test.
Is that like a philosophical thing, determining if the universe had a beginning? Is that like, who deals with this idea? Who deals with this question?
That kind of question. Well, I mean, again, like people are interested in the idea of whether or not we live in a simulation. I mean, that's scientific sounding, but I don't think like we could arrive scientifically at the conclusion that it's possible to simulate a universe. But if you ask me, that helps us in no way understand our universe, because I don't think we could ever understand whether or not we are that. So it's totally irrelevant. Other than that, mostly theists, I think,
okay,
are interested in that. And I mean, good for them, I guess. I was going to say, I don't really understand why. And I guess I don't. I mean, if you think it's a question that needs to be answered, then okay. But I don't think that you have a real epistemology.
Okay. And just a question, what I assume, maybe I'm wrong, I assume you weren't always an atheist. Maybe you became one later in life, or maybe you were always one.
I was, grew up in the church, got baptized, confirmed.
Okay.
Did other stuff like that, drank the Jesus juice, and then one day I stopped.
So what did you learn about science that led you away from believing in God?
It was more about what I learned about religion. It really had nothing to do with science, because I remember when I was a little kid, my best friend across the street, Philip Smith, we both had like all the Jurassic Park like dinosaur toys and all that kind of stuff, and we were playing with them, and he said that humans and dinosaurs coexisted. I was like, "The fuck are you talking about?" And like, I was a kid that went to church and stuff like that, but I was like, "That's no, what?" So science really was never a threat to what I believed in.
Okay. Okay. And
religion for the other, basically. Typical Globy.
So
thank you, Sparkos.
It's not like you learned about science and then stopped believing in God. You learned about religion and stopped believing in God.
Yeah, and it was a combination of that, and then I actually, for the first time, actually like critically considered or scrutinized what I believe in and why, and I discovered that there's no good reason for me to believe what I believe in.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And there certainly wasn't any good reason to believe what I believe in as opposed to any other mythology.
Okay. What's a good reason? I mean, this is not a great question, but what's a good reason to not believe in a creator or a necessary existence or something along these lines?
What's a good reason not to? The lack of evidence.
Okay.
There's nothing that I really believe in that I don't have evidence for.
Okay.
I wouldn't say.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Have a good day.
Oh, that's it? Oh, well, he left. So, yeah, that's it.
So you're teaching public school students in that time when most are being exposed to actually the hard sciences, so to speak. Because it's not really taught well in elementary.
I kind of doubt it.
What do you think happens during these years of, I will say about 6 years of your education probably have more hard sciences in it. And what happens at the end of that? Like, what's happening that people just don't know anything?
Well, I don't think this is anything new. Actually, I don't think the problem is as bad as people think it is, because somebody who thinks the Earth is flat today knows more scientific, arguably, knows more scientific facts about the world than the smartest people living 200 years ago did. Just because there's so much stuff that we all take for granted that we don't really think about that we know is true. Even those idiots.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, now there's a lot of, like, nonsense, but even though we have people, like, I don't know, even though it seems like we're, like, polarized in what we can accept as true, there's still all the made-up for just sheer ignorance that we used to have about basically everything. And that's been taken away. So I actually don't have that pessimistic of an outlook on it. Now, why do people think the Earth is flat today? But arguably, even as a percent of the world's population, like obviously more people believe it today than whatever when Columbus was alive, because there are more human beings. But I don't think we can really know this, but it maybe as a percentage of the world population, more people believe it today than ever. People just have weird beliefs. It's sort of a sad thing about us is we can be manipulated in ways that just don't seem quite right, that seem very gross. Edward Bernays, he was Sigmund Freud's nephew. He's the father of public relations. He literally made it cool for women to smoke in the early 1900s by literally just having women march in a I think it was an Easter parade in New York.
Uh-huh.
And he put up flyers that said women are going to light torches of freedom to symbolize their independence. I was like, what is smoking in public have anything to do with feminism? Other than nothing. But it worked like a charm, and cigarette sales exploded after that.
Well,
we can be manipulated in creepy ways like that. People want to be told what to believe in, and so people will fall in line with all kinds of kooky ideas.
But at the same time, being able to engage in the same vices as men really is liberating for women.
True. I think that was kind of the argument. Like, it was viewed like, well, a woman shouldn't, like a man smokes in public or whatever, but a woman shouldn't. And it's like, yeah, okay. But I mean, this was just really obviously, like, women weren't clamoring for that. It was a tobacco company that came to him and said, we want to sell more cigarettes. And so he said, oh, well, I could get the female market on your side just by making up that this has anything to do with feminism. So, yes, hail Spanky. Thank you. Thank you,
Tate. I mean, it might be the pink pussy hats of its day, but...
Yeah, I think... those aren't popular, though, are they?
No, they were right around the big women's march.
I remember.
And it's fun. I never had one because I don't like wearing that kind of freaking hat anyway. I mean, not that I wouldn't. I went to the marches. My sign said this, you know, P word bites and scratches.
Oh, interesting.
And now I've been sort of thinking of this idea of how bad we teach human biology and human anatomy. And I'm wondering if we just, were we...
We teach it badly?
At all. If we teach it at all, yeah.
Well, it's not required. I mean, I've taught anatomy for 10 years.
Yeah.
Not every year.
Well, and I mean societally. I don't necessarily mean you as a teacher of science. But I think that we end up with a lot of people in adulthood who just, like, they just really don't understand much about caring for their own health or...
I mean, that could be, but I would say that's probably more of a consequence of the... I'm going to sound like such a socialist or whatever, but the commoditization of everything and the push for... Like, you go to a grocery store, there's that one aisle where the stuff that's good for you exists, and then every single other aisle is processed garbage, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think people are just set up to fail. I mean, read Manufacturing Consent by Noam Chomsky, and read some of the, I already mentioned stuff about Edward Bernays. But just look into how we are just manipulated into not exactly making bad choices, but for bad choices to be like it only looks like you have those choices in front of you because of the way things are set up and designed, and people that make a lot of money literally hire people that study neuroscience and psychology and, and sociology and group to be like, well, how can we manipulate people into buying our product? And I think that that's just disgusting and wrong, but that's what people do, right? In terms of, well, this is kind of a tangent, but it's interesting. I had this conversation with my homeroom like last week. I was like, if you guys had to guess, do you think like teen pregnancies, like that issue, do you think that's getting better, worse, or do you think it's staying the same? And they all thought that it was getting worse because, like, you know, it gets talked about, you hear about it. It's not a show anymore, but there used to be like My like Teenage Mom on VH1 or whatever, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But we looked up the data and it's like versus like the 50s and 60s, it's like 5, 6, 7 times lower than it was back then. And it's precisely because we actually talk about these kind of things. Because when it's in the open, when we acknowledge that it's part of reality, then it's not really stigmatized anymore. And weirdly, instead of that making it now like acceptable or whatever, people just actually, going to what you're talking about earlier, know and understand these things better because they are actually talked about. And so that issue's got a bit. Same with drunk driving. People think that that's getting worse, but it's like, no, that's like in the 90s, it was insane. Mm-hmm. Or 80s and 90s, it was insane how bad drunk driving death rates were compared to today.
I think Uber and Lyft made a huge difference. I have to think that makes a huge difference.
Remember when we were all told not to get into cars with strangers?
Right. Now we're telling us, well, maybe we do that when we're drunk. Or, and I'm just so glad that I don't drink. I'm just like, this is fine. I'm fine. I'll be fine. I'm not worried about what's going to happen to me while I'm out there drinking, because I'm not going to be out there drinking. Just, you know, shout out for not drinking there. Do you think that we might be able to reduce people's prudishness around educating children properly on biology if we just said, hey, this is just agricultural education. This is just, you know, like, no, if we put it into a context.
I don't think you should lie to them. I think you should just make evidence-based logical arguments for it. Like,
yeah,
the idea that even young people should be like at least introduced to the idea of like their bodies. I always thought that was kind of creepy and gross until I heard that children who are victims of like sexual abuse or whatever, don't, so much of it doesn't get reported because the kids actually have no idea what's even happening to them because they don't know about their own bodies. And that seems really weird, but guys, we all had to be taught how to wipe our own butts. We don't know how any of it works. You're not born knowing how any of that works, right?
To do that,
so.
Oh, look, I'm being accused of yapping now.
Wait, you guys don't still use your litter box from when you were a kid?
Dude, I just have money to help me out. What do you mean?
See, now when we have this bathroom debate, I just keep thinking, I would like to see just all the cis het men can just go out behind the building and discreetly pee back behind the building and let the rest of us just use the bathrooms.
Like the farmers used to.
Yeah.
Like they still do. Like,
it would probably just make things a lot easier for everybody. No, see, that's yapping.
Maybe. Actually, like the smartest thing I ever saw about this, or way to handle this I ever saw was I was at the Red Rocks Amphitheater outside of Denver, Colorado.
Uh-huh.
And the bathrooms there are really interesting. You go into this big room, but it's like literally men, women all in the same line. And I was like, how does this work? So like you go into the room, there's no actual door. It's just an opening. And then there's sinks there, but then there's like 15 stalls that are really super uh-huh. narrow. They each have their own locking door. And it's like, oh, this is just a row of, like,
privacy
of toilet. It's just a row of stalls yeah. that everybody goes in, and it's open. So it's not like you can go in there and like sneak up on somebody or anything. I was like, that makes perfect sense, because uh-huh. then there's no such thing as the line for the girls' bathroom is so much longer and the line for the guys' bathroom isn't, or whatever. It's just the line and it's open and nobody can, like, you know, there's nothing to worry about with that. I was like, that's this. Now you'd have to completely redo it everywhere, which is a pain in the ass or whatever. But yeah, that's like, I was like, that's the best solution. And it's like, not even if this whole like identity thing wasn't this big deal going on, I was like, that's just actually the best way to do it.
Right. So. And especially consider like at a sporting event, you know, where they have the sporting, or, you know, like some of the clubs down in West Hollywood and stuff have it sort of like that. And for them, it's really versatile, because there are nights when it's pretty much just all men, and there are nights when it's about half and half, and they never really have to worry about, like, there's just enough for everybody.
And women, you don't know this, but you have missed out on literally decades of the most vile and hilarious and interesting bathroom poetry written on walls that you can imagine. You've never been able to read that stuff that people like me have written. And now if everybody can use them, now you'll get to see it.
So how are things going on in the United States right now? Because I actually moved about 5 months ago. I moved out of the States to the Philippines because of a lot of issues that were happening there. And but I also wanted a place to. I wanted to move out of the country
for a long time. Man, I mean, well, this year will be very interesting because we have two people running for president that nobody wants. One of them could die at any minute, and then some completely incompetent idiot war hawk lady that will start a nuclear World War III will get in there, or an actual criminal. Well, I mean, they're kind of all criminals, but whatever. But like a real criminal might get in there, but he might actually be holding office from jail because he's obviously extremely guilty of stealing classified documents, but he's going to win the nomination, and he's who that party's going to push for. And the other guy is so incompetent, and he completely and utterly and permanently lost the young vote, not only because he failed on most of his promises, but now he's basically abating in a genocide, and they won't forgive him for that. So he's almost certainly going to lose to this narcissistic maniac criminal who would... The thing about the other guy is, if every single person on Earth died except him and one person to worship him unconditionally, he would be okay with that. And so if things don't go his way, he's going to demand a civil war happen. And a lot of people are going to be more than happy to do that. So, best case scenario, all that happens, but the only thing that comes out of it is a massive expansion of the surveillance state and the police state and all that kind of stuff, which will make all of our lives slightly more miserable. Well, a lot more miserable.